Thank you for joining me this evening. Always a pleasure to sit in for George Norrie, and thank you for being a part of it with me. John Sable of Ghost Excavations is an archaeologist and cultural anthropologist, unearthing past material remains with an emphasis on the studies of spirits and the afterlife. Along with his co-director, Mary Becker, they're here with us this evening as we talk about evidence for afterlife consciousness. And I'm curious, guys, when you go to these locations, do you think that you're dealing with ghosts in the sense of dead people still existing on that plane? Or are you dealing with consciousness that is kind of burned into the, I don't know, what you, burned into the history of time there?
Well, I look at it two ways. One is an embedded presence, which is like a residual recording. And the other thing is an attached presence, something that is interactive. And this interactive presence, I think, is a past consciousness that is a bundle of experience, particular experiences, memories, and remembrances of particular situations that they encountered in the past. So I think there is this fragment, this trace of a consciousness that goes beyond the body. I think the brain and there is something beyond when the brain dies. There's still the consciousness, some consciousness still goes on. I think there's a separation there between brain and consciousness out there. It's external. So what's going on there is, again, residual embeddedness and conscious attachment at places. That is the remains of the past and the present. So when I look at it is this reality of past presence with this fragments and traces and erasures is a total mess. So we have to bring order and control to this mess. So what we have to explain then is not how perception arises, such as through environmental deviations or measurements or psychological profiling, but how perception is limited. And so I look at places where I can limit perceptions, such as American Civil War battlefields, where the perception is based not on the five senses, but is limited on a battlefield to sounds. So I focus on the retention of past sounds in the present.
All right, I have an interesting email here. Abby wants to know, ask your guests about Ambrose Bierce. He was one of those Civil War writers who told stories about people who were there and then not there in the middle of battles, or dead for days when the people in his unit thought he was alive trying to lead them somewhere. Are the guests actually changing events in history and in time? And that comes from Abby Herrick. Interesting question, Abby.
So when we're making contact, are we changing history? Is that what she's trying to say?
Yeah, she's curious if you guys might be having an effect on history.
I don't think so.
No.
I really don't.
No, because again, with this whole idea that we're making contact with a presence that is attached to a particular experience and memory and remembrance of what they did. So we're only making contact with that existing experience, that their existing memory, and their existing remembrance of a particular situation or event. So they are still attached to that bundle of experience, memory, and remembrance. We're not changing their experience. We're not changing their memories because we're resonating with them. And that's the problem, because it's not us that are changing the things, but maybe some of these people out there doing entertaining ghost hunting are changing things, because they're introducing things that are not part of the experience of a past presence or the memory of a past presence. They're adding an experience. They're adding something of a memory to that. So it's not us that is making the change, but maybe ghost hunting is.
That's a fascinating aspect to look at. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll begin with your phone calls and questions, stories, and more when we return to Coast to Coast AM. We're back on Coast to Coast AM. And remember, you can see George Nori live with his stage show May 6th. Go to Ticketmaster.com, type in George Nori in the search engine. You'll find more information on how you can get tickets and meet the king of late night overnight talk radio yourself, along with some of his guests. All right, we are talking with John Sable, Mary Becker this evening as we talk about paranormal investigating. Yeah, that was a couple of fascinating thoughts and ideas there. You know, are we influencing by the way investigators are doing things? Are we influencing or causing hiccups in time by introducing items that did not belong or were not part of that history to begin with? Definitely makes you sit back and think. Let's start with some of the phone lines here. East of the Rockies, we have Luke in Liberty, Texas. Luke, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me. And there's a haunted graveyard in my hometown in Huntsville, Texas, called Demon Road. And it supposedly had like KKK and Satanist activity during like the mid 1800s. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe about 3 years ago, I was just driving over there in the middle of the night just to see if I can see some ghosts and hear some ghost voices. And I'm going to tell you, you know, what I heard, just with my own two ears, my own two eyes. One of the, maybe about 15 minutes, after sitting in my car, I took out my phone and I called one of my friends and I put the phone to my left ear and I heard a male voice whisper, "Drop it." And, but there was nobody there. And maybe about right after I heard that voice, I saw either a pair of red ghost orbs or a pair of red ghostly eyes that appeared maybe about 30 feet from my car and 30 feet up in the air. And also, another time I went back to that cemetery, I didn't hear any ghost voices, but I saw the same pair of red ghostly eyes or pair of red ghost orbs, and I also saw a white ghost orb that would blink from time to time, and just wanted to share that with you. And
all right, Luke, well, on that. Thank you for calling in and sharing some of your experiences with that. I don't know. It's hard to say what kind of experiences you were having. Have you, and thank you for calling in, Luke. John, Mary, when you've been out to these locations, aside from the audio that you get, do you see physical phenomena and spirits, spirit lights, any of this yourself?
The only things that I see, I'm sorry, the only things that I've experienced and see, I do see things in this house, in the house that we live in. And I tell it to John. John does not see anything. He always says he doesn't sense anything, but yet sometimes he does.
Okay.
More keen than he believes to be. And but as far as like going out to battlefields, the only thing phenomena I've seen is like little blue lights up in the trees, and apparently not everybody sees that. Usually one or two other investigators at the site will see it, and then everyone else is, they don't know what we're talking about. So that's about it. John, you go ahead.
I have to admit, the other day I was sitting in the TV room and I was watching TV, and I think the cat was on my lap, or the dog was on my lap, and the cat was near me as well, because they're both attached to me. They're both. But anyway, I was sitting there, and all of a sudden, out of my corner of my eye, I saw something walking from the tea room, our tea room, into the TV room, and it looked like a cat or a dog. I mean, it was obvious. I mean, it was either a cat or a dog, which had four legs. And I said, wait a minute, the dog's here, the cat's here, there's no other animal in the house. And that kind of really spooked me. That's the first time that happened to me in, you know, I don't know, in a long time, something like that. And supposedly the ladies who sold us the house said that there are animal presences or animal spirits in this house. But that's the first time I ever had a visual experience of something like that. That was kind of interesting for me because I usually, no matter when I go out in the field, I don't know, maybe I have something surrounding me all the time because I never have any experiences out in the field. I guess because I'm focused so much on what I'm trying to do with the scenarios and trying to immerse myself that I don't really perceive other things going on. I just let the team do their work, what they have to do, and I do what I have to do.
All right. Let's go to West of the Rockies, Tom, in Port Angeles, Washington. You're on the air.
Hello, Dave. It was interesting to hear that there was somebody that emailed in with the same thing I was thinking about, and that is, you know, maybe you are back in the midst of a battle or before the battle, and you're not seeing it because it's not happening in this time frame, but you say something that alters the established timeline, and about a week after you do it, that battle wasn't lost, it was won. And there's historians all over the country, thousands of people saying, hey, that's not the way it came out. That's not the way that happened. And they get into history books and they find out, well, that's the way it was there in the history books, and they must be wrong. But thousands of historians know in their heart of hearts that that never happened. That's not the way it went. Something changed that. And if you want to make a movie out of that, I'll write you the script, Dave. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think that's fascinating. And I believe that was kind of a Twilight Zone, an old Twilight Zone episode based on that aspect as well.
Well, we
they were walking up the road to get to where they were going from the Civil War, and they died. Yeah.
What we try to do on a Civil War battlefield is, for example, at Antietam, I go, like, for example, I follow the sequence of events that occurred in the history books. So I'm following the history books. If the history books are wrong, then I'm doing it wrong. But if the history books are more or less accurate, then I'm doing it more or less accurate. Not only do I follow what's in the history books according to the sequence of events, but also in the particular military spaces on the battlefield, I do specific scenarios that are contextual to that particular space, and so I use the five different spaces that are usually found on a battlefield as the commanders used it during the Civil War, the COCOA spaces. So in key areas, I do certain context-specific scenarios. In obstacle areas, I do other context-specific scenarios. In avenues of approach, I still do others. So I'm trying to be as true to the nature of what happened in space and time sequence as I possibly can. But I'm not saying I'm doing it perfectly, or I'm not saying maybe I'm not causing a ripple in time, but I'm trying to be as close as possible to what happened in space and time in that particular event.
Cool. All right. Very fascinating. First time caller, Andrew in Austin, Texas. You're on the line.
Thanks, Dave. Wow, this is really exciting. Okay, so I was in Gettysburg last year, and I'm from Pennsylvania originally, and I'm a history major, and I love the Civil War. And anytime I get to go to Gettysburg, I love to just kind of hang around, see what I can see and experience the thing. But this is the first time I went on a ghost tour, and I had two experiences. First one was we stayed in a hotel. That was me and my girlfriend. We stayed in a hotel. It was at Pickett's Charge. It was like right at Emmitsburg Pike. And when we left the hotel in the morning, we smelled the smell. The smell like burning hair. And I'm thinking it was sort of like, because we heard stories about how after the battle they burned the horses that had died there, and there was a lot of horses that had died there. So but the second experience, this is a little more. This is also like a rumination. We were at the Reynolds house during the ghost tour, which is where John Reynolds died after he got shot during the first day of the battle, I believe. And the girl who was giving the ghost tour, she said that sometimes people see people in the building. We looked in the building. We didn't see anything. But we walked away, and I felt something strange. So I looked back, and I saw, and this is like 10 o'clock at night, I saw a soldier, a Union soldier, walk into the building, open the door, and I was maybe 100 yards away, and I was just, I guess, wondering if you guys had ever experienced anything at the John Reynolds house, That's what I experienced. Yeah.
Yeah, we were offered to do an excavation there, but we had other things come up. So I know what you're talking about. That's where they have the historic photography done, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. We might go back there and do some scenarios there. I can believe that. See, what happened, what is interesting, we did an excavation it was once a museum in Gettysburg with one of our friends, an investigator, and we did a replay of the retreat on day one of the Union going through the town and then the Confederates coming into town. And we did some scenarios down in the basement, and then we came out to the backyard, and I thought, well, okay, the Union is retreating, the Confederates are trying to, you know, run into town. So these soldiers, you know, they must be very, very, very thirsty. So I did some scenarios related to water and things. At one time, there was a well in the back of the house at the time of the Civil War. So we did these scenarios, and we started taking some photographs. Well, when we looked at the photographs afterwards, what appeared in the yard was a well. And there were three females in right around the well just sitting there. But that well does not exist in contemporary time, but it did in the past. But we caught it in our photograph. Now, did our scenario trigger that photograph or that manifestation of that well to come into the present, or it was just a residual coming into the present? So that goes back to that first question: are we changing time? And I just thought of the scenario that when we did that scenario with the water, all of a sudden this well appeared where it no longer exists in our photograph. So that was kind of interesting.
Thank you. Thank you very much for calling in, Andrew. We've got just a minute or two left here before we have to go to the break. For people that are interested in putting themselves out there, trying to experience the paranormal, is it something that you suggest everybody could do and should at least consider doing? Or do you believe that they should really just kind of stand back and not interfere with these timelines, not interfere with these historic sites?
Well, I don't like people who come in and try to come in from a perspective of using modern equipment, things that don't resonate with what occurred in the past. The technology is different, the behavior is different, the dress is different. I think all of these things probably confuse a lot of the entities if they exist there. So I think you have to do things in moderation. You should at least try to resonate with what occurred in a particular space in the past, as opposed to actually introducing new things that maybe cause more confusion of an entity that doesn't really know what happened to them, that maybe still believes that they're still alive or doesn't know that they're dead, and you introduce all this new technology, new behavior, new dress, new ways of saying things. I think that confuses the entities even more. So I think that's a bad thing.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll take more of your phone calls. If you'd like to email in questions, I'll try to work them in through the show as well. You can email me, dave@darknessradio.com. And if you're interested in the supernatural and the paranormal, I ask you to join me on the best of Paranormal Talk Radio, 5 nights a week, Monday through Friday. Check out podcast1.com, Beyond the Darkness. That's the name of our show at podcast1.com, Beyond the Darkness, where Tim Dennis and myself explore all the different aspects of the strange and supernatural. We'd love for you to be our guest and join us. Listen in Monday through Fridays. We'll be back with more Coast to Coast AM right after this. Thank you very much for joining us as we're talking with John Sable and Mary Becker. I got to tell you guys, you know, I was out at Gettysburg a few years back, and there is the Eisenhower Hotel. And on their property, they have a house that's built there, and I guess nobody stays in it very long. Have you seen that house? Have you visited that?
We've driven past, right?
Yeah, we've
never been in it.
Yeah.
Well, they'd given us access to investigate the house. They said nobody will stay in the house. It's a beautiful little place right there on the property. And we had been in there, Jeff Belanger and myself, and we were kind of stationed in the basement of the house to investigate with some of the guests. And cut in the hole of the basement is this crawl space area. And we crawled into the crawl space area because, of course, it's dark and creepy, and why not? You know, it'd be fun to get in there. And we went in and sat there with our backs against the wall and had a few other people crawl in with us as we were just seeing what was going on. And as we're sitting there kind of discussing collecting electronic voice phenomena, the shadow walks up. You can see this figure walk up in front of the cut hole in the wall, and it's looking at us. And we said, well, we're just going to do some EVP work if you want to come in and join us. And the figure crawls into the room and crawls off to my right, which would be the left coming in. And it crawls up against the wall, and I said, all right, we're going to do EVP. Do you have any questions? You want to, you know, introduce yourself? No response, nothing. Jeff goes, yeah, you just came in. We're going to do some electronic voice phenomena recording here. What's your name so we can introduce you? No sound. Jeff grabs his flashlight and hits the flashlight, aiming it over there. Nothing there. With the light on or with the light off, you could see this shadow sitting against the wall. There's five of us in this little room watching this thing crawl in through the hole and go position itself against the other wall. And as soon as the light goes on, it's gone. That was a really strange moment in Gettysburg for me. And then I was at the Farnsworth House.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been there many times.
And I was stuck up in, you know, that little attic area up there?
Yeah, you mean where the sharpshooter was?
Right. We were up in the attic, and we were, you know, I was like hour four of investigating up there as these teams kept rotating through. And at some point, you just get tired. As Mary, you mentioned in one of the first hours, all these weird questions that people want to ask when it gets to that. And I decided in the last hour, let's go for broke. I just said, what's it like to die? Is there a heaven? Is there God? Is, you know, just trying to get some kind of communication going at this point. And we play back. There's four or five of us that made it through the night. And we're all standing there in the attic. We do this last EVP session. We play back the recorder and no answer, no answer, no answer. I get to the question, is there God? And this answer comes out. You could hear it right in between all four or five of us. You hear this voice go, no. And we're like, whoa. So we rewind the recording to play it back. I go, that was crazy. We rewind it, play it back. You hear the series of questions. We get to, is there a God? And there's no sound.
Oh.
No response. We realize that it was a direct voice phenomena. Something said that in the middle of our little circle. We all heard it right there. We thought it was on the recorder because we were playing it back, but it wasn't there. However, I'm curious, do you ever record something, it's there, and when you go back to play it later, completely gone?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that happens.
Yeah. People seem to experience different things. Like somebody might see something, the rest of the group doesn't. Somebody might hear something, which has happened to me, and no one else hears it.
Or they hear something different.
Or they smell something, and someone else, two people might smell something, the rest does not. You know, things like that happen a lot, I think, on investigations.
Yeah.
And it's all, what we do is I write everything down that happens. Everything's documented, because sometimes that does help us when we do further research after the investigation. It may back up something else. So it's a good thing to always document everything. I handwrite everything while
right. I'm a big fan of taking notes. I always think that's an important aspect of it and a lost art when it comes to paranormal investigating. And that always really helps me later when you're reviewing evidence. And whether you're picking something up, you're experiencing something, and then later listen back to electronic voice phenomena or video, and you capture what you were thinking you were experiencing, and you've got notes to back up what was going on in that room, I think that's a really, like I said, lost art to an investigation.
Yeah, and I prefer that. Somebody said, well, why don't you do audio record? Why aren't you saying it into an audio? But if I did that, that would be disrupting what's going on in the scenario.
Right.
So I don't ever do that. I always write, you know, sometimes in the audio, you can hear me writing on paper, but I always make sure to note that, you know, that I'm doing that. And also, I think it really helps back you up, especially like, oh, somebody coughed a little bit. Well, sometimes when you're listening to audio, that may sound like a response, but it
right.
isn't. It's a cough. And
right.
I try to
what...
write down the time as well.
Good deal. Do you, let's do this. Nathan, clarification real quickly. Do we have another break or are we good to the top of the hour? Okay, we do have to take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue with your calls. We'll do that next on Coast to Coast AM. Phone lines are open. We're going to continue with your calls for the remainder of the hour. Wild card line one, Tim in Racine, Wisconsin. Welcome to the show.
How are you doing this morning?
Good, Tim. Thanks for listening. Yeah, well, what's your question for us?
Well, actually, I was curious. When you're doing these sessions, have you ever tried to maybe help a spirit get to the other side? I guess that's my question.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling in with that. Is that part of the work you do, or are you there just more to document communication, guys? Where do you stand on that?
We're there to document. The reason why we don't do the crossovers is because we're not qualified. We're not...
Or family.
Yeah, we aren't... we're not psychologists. We're not... we're not...
I still think it boils down to these entities that are still here. If they're interactive, they're attached to a particular experience, to a particular memory of that experience, a remembrance of it. And I don't feel qualified to go in and analyze what that is. And if I try to... detach them from that memory or experience, I might cause more harm than good.
Also, I never hear these entities saying, I want to go to the other side, or I want to go to home or whatever, except for
Colonel Holmes,
but he is asking specifically, because we asked this question, he's asking specifically to be returned to his home in Georgia, if that is indeed him.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to...
There's a great site there in Georgia that has his name on it, but it's an empty grave. He's still on the Antietam battlefield.
Oh, all right, let's go to wildcard line two. Darren in William, Oregon, you're on the air. Sharon in wildcard two.
That's okay.
My ears are not working well tonight, Sharon. Sorry about that. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I have a couple of things. Actually, the first one, my first trip to the Shenandoah Valley, driving away from Roanoke up to Lexington, Virginia, I had a really heavy, sad feeling, and then I realized where I was. And have you folks ever been to Robert E. Lee's burial chapel?
No, I have not.
No, I haven't either.
Yeah, I got about 50 feet from it, and tears just started streaming down my face. And there was a very heavy feeling. And as soon as I toured the chapel and left, about the same spot where my sadness and the tears started, I felt...
What's in the surrounding area? Is there any water around there?
No, it's the right there at the Military Academy in Lexington, Virginia. Yeah, and then the... I was back there for a show, and I was staying at a red carpet inn that's now apparently closed, because while I was waiting, I went online to see what I could find out. It's closed now, but this might be something you want to look into. I was in the room, and about 3 a.m. in the morning, there was three big raps on the wall next to me, like somebody knocking really loud on the door. And so I got up, my body lifted, and I turned away from the wall. And then I got up to look outside to see if anybody was there, and there was no one. So the next morning I asked the lobbyist, if she knew of anybody having any odd experiences in there. And she said no. And I noticed that there was one of those metal highway signs, and I walked over to it, and it was talking about an abolitionist. Now, I think his name was William Henry Ruffner. Anyways, it was talking about how he had been taken by the Union, and they said his farmhouse was somewhere in the area, but they didn't know where. I thought, I know exactly where it was.
Yeah.
Because, I heard that rapping when they came and took him from his house.
Well, see, that's very important, because it's not what is there today that's important. It's the space, it's the layers of memory that still remain attached to that space that is doing the haunting. So it could be from something 50 years ago, something from 10 years ago, something from 100 years ago, something from 150 years ago.
That's why it's important to do this research by these layers of memory while you have to do a lot of research to find out what was there in the past and all these different layers to understand what's going on.
All right. Thank you very much, Sharon. We appreciate that. Let's go east of the Rockies. We've got John in Springfield, Missouri. John, you're on the air.
Yes. Around my hometown of Springfield, there was a lot of Civil War battles. Just putting that out there. So we have a lot of history with that in the area. What my particular experience was, I was out at a place called Wilson's Creek National Battlefield, which is 10 miles south of Springfield. I am a combat infantryman. Right after I graduated basic training, I started to do my PT out there. And I had stopped at a location called Bloody Hill to take a rest from my run. All of a sudden, I heard about 50 voices, all of them saying the same thing, "Hello, brother." My fiance, who was driving the car behind me, she also heard them.
Wow.
That's cool.
That's lovely.
So somehow they knew you were resonating with them, that you were a soldier too.
Yeah, so that's the feeling I've got. Now, back to the other thing is as I walk around my hometown, especially in the downtown area where there was another Civil War battle, I feel as though there are people walking with me. As though there are the soldiers who were there who are walking with me. Does that ever happen to you guys?
Yeah. You feel an empathy toward a feeling or an experience or something that you can relate to, like in your memory that resonates with their memory. So yeah, that happens a lot. I mean, at Antietam, you know, I get soldiers at Antietam that call my name. But I my actions resonate with them so much so that they know who I am when I go back there again. And it's sort of the same thing that's happening to you. You there's an empathetic connection between you as a soldier and them as you as a soldier in the present and them as soldiers in the past. There's some kind of a empathetic connection, an empathy.
Well, if you guys get a chance, I would recommend that you guys take a look at Wilson's Creek. It was the bloodiest battle west of the Mississippi.
Oh, really? We'd like to check that out. Yeah, what's the name of it again? Wilson's Creek?
Wilson's Creek National Battlefield in Battlefield, Missouri.
Okay. Mary's writing it down right now.
Great. Thank you very much for calling in. Let's go. First-time caller, we've got Greg in West Texas. You're on the air.
Hey, I appreciate you taking my call. I've had experiences all my life that I really couldn't explain. A couple of things specifically that one's significant to me, one of them's really not significant, but I've always felt uncomfortable talking about these things. I've talked to family members about them and kind of got laughed at. But the first thing, my father died when I was about 20, and he and I used to fish a lot. That was, you know, kind of our thing. And, after he died, I stayed with my mother for about a week, and I was sleeping in the bed that I slept in when I was a kid. And I woke up in the middle of the night, and I felt a presence, something just right by the bed. I was just wide awake, laying on my stomach. And all of a sudden, the covers on my bed started shaking, like somebody was grabbing them. And that's the way my father used to wake me up to go fishing.
Oh.
And it's happened to me about three other times, and freaked me out the first time. But the other times it happened, I tried to spoke to him, or I really feel like it's my father, but I spoke and I've never gotten any kind of response at all. The second thing that happened was just kind of odd. We were in Savannah recently, and we'd never been there, and there was a bus tour of supposedly the haunted places in Savannah, and we stopped at Juliet Lowe's house. And supposedly was haunted. We were upstairs on the second floor and the tour. We're going back downstairs, and halfway down the stairs, my phone rang. And I don't know if you remember the Addams Family little theme song. It was cartoonish. Right. It rang for about 7 or 8 seconds, and it stopped. And I looked at my phone, and there was no record of any call, and I don't have any ringtones on my phone. It was, like I say, not significant, just something I couldn't explain.
Wow, very weird.
Happened to me a lot.
Thanks a lot for listening and sharing your story, Greg. That's, man, when you're getting phone calls and your phone's ringing and making sounds you're not even programmed in for, very strange. Wildcard line three, John, we only have about a minute and a half left. You have a quick question for our guest?
Yeah, real quick. I was in Gettysburg last year in Antietam. It's a spooky place, man. But anyway, I wanted to ask you guys this. Is it possible, if you can see people, you know, that come up and you can see them visually, how do you know that they can't see you if you're going? And in some way, those girls around the well, maybe that well existed in 1910. They're sitting around it then or something. Or maybe do you think that maybe if in some slight way you might have changed the battle because they saw a ghost and reacted a certain way that was you? You know, that it could be a two-way mirror here. I just wondered if, you know, maybe you're inadvertently somehow save somebody's life or something because you changed the battle because they saw you. You know what I mean?
They kind of crossed that a little bit earlier when we talked about that. But I will tell you, there's places, John, like Waverly Hills Sanitarium, where ghosts have been seen in all time. And what I found was funny is nurses and doctors would round the corner and see spirits, and they would take off running. And we've been in there when people have reported seeing a ghost of a nurse round the corner and then take off running. And you wonder, in that moment, who's haunting who?
Exactly.
What was going on in that exact moment? So I think in some cases there might be those time slips, part of time and space kind of coming together and just shattering at that moment. But thanks a lot for calling in, John. John, Mary, we've got about a minute left here together. What do you think of moments like that? Do you think that we do collide with time from time to time?
Yeah, I mean, I believe there's multiple different layers of time. And, you know, in archaeology, the time is very, very important. And archaeology today talks about how the past unfolds into the present. So they're talking about an unfolding past and present where past and present meet together. And that affects the future. So I believe that time bends in many ways. And so that sort of addresses what you're talking about, the time slips and stuff like that. So that people in archaeology are talking about that today. So I think that's important.
Well, I can't thank you both enough for joining us this evening and being a part of the show. Thank you for sharing your information, your knowledge. We'll have links up to your website so people can check it out. It's always a pleasure sitting in for George, and I thank everybody for being a part of the show with me. I'll be back again March 4th, the day Satan called. Bill Scott, my guest, as we talk about a possession and an exorcism case that will astound you. It is one that will definitely chill you and enlighten you to quite a few things. So make sure you put that on your calendars and join me again for that. I want to thank Nathan and Donna back in the home office for running and making everything go smoothly. Gabe, my engineer here at KNSI in St. Cloud, my new home for Coast to Coast AM. Also, my producers Amy Rouse and Chris Boros, Lisa Lyon, and of course, George Norrie, Eric Altman, John Sable, Mary Becker, my guest this evening, and all of you for sending in your emails and your phone calls and being a part of the show. I'm Dave Schrader with Beyond the Darkness at podcast1.com. Check it out. I'll be back again with you hosting the best in overnight talk radio on March 4th right here on Coast to Coast AM.